Welcome to Control the Flame, the podcast that helps you tame your temper and manage your anger. I'm your host, Claire Bradley, the Anger Management Coach. In this podcast, I'll share with you tips, techniques, and strategies to cope with anger in a healthy and constructive way. Whether you struggle with anger yourself, or you have to deal with someone who does, this podcast is for you. Each week, I'll bring you expert interviews, inspiring stories, and practical advice on how to control the flame and live a more peaceful and fulfilling life. So sit back, relax, and get ready to learn how to master your emotions and take charge of your anger. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much. So to all those people listening, we have a guest. we've got Kristen from Red Star Wealth.
Yes, and education, and Kristen Cunliffe Money Coach. So I have three businesses, all interlinked. But yeah, my primary business, if you like, is Red Star Wealth.
Wow. So do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so I consider myself to be a financial planner, educator, and certified financial coach. Okay. So my primary business, as I said, Red Star Wealth, is an independent financial planning firm, directly authorised by the FCA, and we mainly support clients in their investment and pension planning. Okay. And then my husband and I run a company, Red Star Education, which has been providing specialist financial education for the last 10 years. We work with a number of corporate clients with their apprentices and workforces to enhance their financial well-being. And we also work a lot in elite sport. So we deliver financial education on behalf of the Premier League, the Football League, the Women's Super League, various other sporting academies and structures. And then for the last 3 years, I've also been a certified financial coach, working with individuals on their money mindset and how they feel about money, how wealth might affect them and their life decisions, and looking at things from an emotional point of view rather than a facts and figures point of view. So I'm all of those three things.
We were talking before we stopped, we pressed record, and it's so interesting to, you know, think about people's relationship with finance. It can be quite a turbulent relationship, can't it?
Yes, definitely. It really can and is. And I think even if you feel that your relationship with money is reasonably positive, I still think there's behaviours and habits that people have, which they might be completely unaware of why or how that's how they feel. But certainly in the UK, this is a topic we just do not talk about. Yeah. And I think that air of unknowing adds to then our expectations within our relationships with other people and our relationship with money. Mm-hmm. The fact that it is still, I think, one of the taboo subjects.
Absolutely. And I know from my background working in domestic abuse, when I would speak to the chaps that I work with and say, tell me what your triggers are, the amount of times that they would say finance,
right,
or money, whether that's lack of it, someone spending too much of it, or not being able to talk about finance.
Yeah. It is so emotional. Mm. It is such an emotional and emotive topic that I think, if you, like I say, I think if you have a fairly positive relationship with money. It might be difficult to see why, but for the vast majority of people, they can look at themselves and think at some point there has been an emotional reaction to something to do with money, be that stress, worry, as you say, anger will come out. But there's a lot of feeling sometimes of guilt, of shame, of not feeling good enough, which then, as you've just said, will then trigger a behaviour reaction. Yeah. And what I do as a coach and what I just find completely fascinating is that if we wind back on some of those reactions and behaviours and start asking why that has happened and we start to peel it back a little bit, generally speaking, it won't ever be about the money.
Oh.
Ever. It won't. It'll be about something else. And money and finance tends to be the issue that someone will use.
Right.
Or it'll be the starting point of conflict. But the reason, it'll be something else.
So it's almost like the stick to hit them with.
Yeah, generally. I mean, like if we take, let me sort of say it like this. If you look at somebody who, for example, might overspend.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you might think, well, the issue here is that somebody is just spending too much money and we can't afford it. But then it'll be a case of, well, why are they spending that money?
Yeah.
Like, why is that happening? And it might be, well, they're always reacting to the emails that say there's 40% off or this kind of thing. Yeah, but why are they doing that?
Yeah.
And then very often you can wind it back. And it might be, for example, that somebody just feels that their value is not what they want it to be. And so by buying nice clothes or, you know, cool trainers or a flash car or whatever, that actually they're able to project an image where they feel, okay, now I'm good enough. But the reason they're doing it is because they don't feel good enough.
So it's almost like a comfort.
Sure.
Wow.
So there's lots of reasons people do what they do with money. Most of the time it's not about money.
So then, what strategies do you recommend for managing financial stress effectively?
Do you know the biggest thing, and I'm going to say this, and it'll sound so simple, but it's the hardest thing, is to talk about money, is to actually acknowledge its existence and its impact on the way that we feel. Mm-hmm. And I know that that isn't easy for everybody. And certainly in a relationship, I mean, you speak to any lawyer and they will tell you some of the biggest arguments happen over who's getting what.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine.
You know? And again, it's probably actually not about who's getting what. It's probably about who did what. But
yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
But it's kind of almost like a metaphor for how our relationships work out. But I think as a strategy to start to adopt an attitude that it is okay to talk about money and that to acknowledge that lots of people feel financial stress, lots of people, particularly, you know, at the moment with a cost of living crisis, etc., there's a lot of people worried about money and there is no shame in that. And there is no shame in not having enough, whatever enough is. And enough is going to be a different thing for very many different people. But being able to say, I am particularly concerned about a situation that has arisen and money is a part of that. There's no shame in that at all. But we as a society have kind of made things like debt almost like something that you should be embarrassed and ashamed about. And yet look around, like most people have got it. Yeah. Like, so why do we avoid this is one of the questions. And then definitely to have a strategy that says, if there are things that are a concern, and then as I say, particularly in a relationship or in a business partnership or something like that, relating to money, let's talk about this. Mm-hmm. Before it gets to crisis point.
Yeah. So how do you talk about it using empathy and using understanding, particularly when there is going to be a high level of emotion involved in that.
Yeah. Pick your moment, I think, is the first one. Mm-hmm. So if you are particularly worried or concerned about it, raising this at, you know, 8:30 in the morning when everyone's going to work is probably not the time it's going to go down very well. Just before you go to bed, it's probably not going to go down very well. And what I would suggest is that you actually, especially in a relationship, have a money date. Say, on this particular day or evening, I'd really like to talk about these things that are concerning me. So can we sit down and can we talk about them? If other things are likely to be a trigger, like, for example, other family members or children or alcohol, let avoid those. Okay, they're off the table, so that you are approaching it as calmly as you possibly can. I would suggest that people make a list of the things that are concerning them without blame.
Yeah, that's so important. I was just going to say that you've got to go in it with complete openness, haven't you?
Yes.
And without that blame, because that's just going to start an argument.
Of course it is. Because what we're going to do, you're going to defend yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we're arguing about something that isn't even that. So without blame, but also with, and this is going to take, I think, probably one person to do it first. Mm. But if people are both listening, like, I really would advocate for this, is to understand that we all have our own money stories. I mean, you have already developed your beliefs around money by the time you're 7 years of age.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. It's already in there. So if you think about some of the things that maybe your parents or your grandparents would say to you, you know, the whole money doesn't grow on trees. You have to work hard for your money. Yeah. You know, easy come, easy go. I mean, when people hear that, they think, oh, it doesn't matter if I spend it all because I'm going to get some more. All of these things are forming an idea in our heads when we're little people.
Yeah.
And so, no matter, even if you're from a similar background, you're probably still going to have a very different money story to that of your partner, be that your business partner or in a relationship. It's probably going to look very different. And this is the same with parents with their children, even. Mm-hmm. You know, the money relationship that my daughter has is very different to the one I had, even though I'm her mum. So.
Yeah.
Approaching a conversation by knowing that we've all probably got different stories that have informed why we think the way we do. And one is not better than the other. It's not right. It's not wrong. It's not your fault. It isn't any of those things. It is what it is.
Yeah.
And I think if you can start to look with some curiosity at your other half or your child or your, whatever it is, to be like, oh, I wonder why they think that. And even take some time to say, you know, what are your beliefs around money? What are your priorities? What were you told as a child? Like, what is your earliest memory of money? I mean, that's a question that I think for a lot of people, they sit and think, oh my gosh, you know, that tells you so much about how we behave. And I think if you can then see another person's point of view, what might be so important to you, you might be able to tell why it's completely irrelevant to them.
I love that idea of having a kind of money date.
Yeah.
Because it just normalizes it. It normalizes sitting down, having a conversation, an adult conversation about something which is up there in our list of priorities because we've got bills to pay, we've got, you know, mortgages to pay, all of that lot. It's really, really important. It's probably as important as raising our kids, is making sure that we can pay to look, you know, to feed the kids. But we won't talk about money. We'll talk about kids, but we won't sit and have a date. A money day.
Money day.
I love that idea.
Yeah. And then you both know what it's about. You know what the conversation's going to be about. It isn't about saying to somebody, you know, right, gotcha, here's your credit card statement. You know, like, let's not do that.
No.
But it's, as you say, it's being a grown-up, it's being an adult and saying these are the things that we need to talk about. And if there are things that are challenging right now, then you can work on them together. Mm. Why are you in a relationship with somebody if you're not going to do things together?
Yeah.
Like, it's one of my sort of principles. So, and without blame, without shame, without guilt, you are where you are. So it's addressing it for the future that I think is the more positive steps to take. And put a time limit on it. So if you're having a money date and you're talking about it, it's going to be, let's say, for 2 hours. And after 2 hours, okay, we've got as far as we can go. Because otherwise, I think if you are discussing it for 7 hours or whatever, you can kind of think, oh, my God, I'm not doing that again. You know, so it's very set. Like once a month, we're going to sit down. We're going to talk about these things. We're going to have a notebook. We're going to write down what our priorities are, our challenges are, what things we need to change, who's going to do which bit. You know, if it's a matter of changing the car insurance, well, who's going to go and do that? You know, these kind of things that you then can revisit these things. And I know it sounds really structured and probably completely unromantic. I get that. But you know what? This is real life.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is so important. And money isn't romantic, is it?
You know? Not really.
Face it. So let's talk about, and I had never heard this before. And when I saw it, financial infidelity, and I was just like, what's that? But then I just thought, I actually know what that is now.
Mm.
So talk me through, what is financial infidelity and how common is it?
Yeah, so financial infidelity is this idea that in a relationship, one or both people maybe have made financial decisions or are making financial decisions and behaviours that they are purposefully keeping from the other, the other side. Oftentimes where they will feel guilty about it, it's probably something that maybe they half feel like they shouldn't be doing.
Right.
You know, being quite secretive and avoiding that disclosure of whatever it is. Oftentimes we might see where somebody has run up debt.
Yeah.
And this might be through overspending, overgiving, it might be gambling or other kinds of addictions that are having a financial impact and purposefully keeping that from their partner. Yeah.
And I know, for me personally, from my background in having that gambling addiction, that when I then realised what financial infidelity was, and I thought, yeah, that's it, you've done that, Claire. And it's not a nice feeling. And it's not a nice feeling when you're doing that and you're in the middle of it thinking, I don't want to do this.
No.
I don't want to be gambling. I want some help. So what steps can someone take if they find that their partner
infidelity is the word. So for me, what can somebody do about it? I think it will depend on each person and each couple. I think that what we've got to recognize in that situation is that a conversation has not been happening about what is making the person do whatever it is. And so in the same way, if you were to discover that somebody did have an addiction, for example, that you didn't know about, or any other sort of behavior or infidelity, well, how would you react to that? Would that be a line that you didn't want crossing, and that's the end of the relationship? I mean, I would suggest that with money, if your feeling for that was so strong, it might be a case of looking and thinking, what is it in my past that has made this discretion so bad? So let's say, for example, you grew up in a household where, you know, your dad, for one, you know, for an example, spent a lot of money on himself and on his friends. Maybe he was, not true and honest to your parents' relationship, and you saw that breaking your mother's heart. So if that then happens to you, even if it's happened with money, your reaction might be, I'm not putting up with this.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think some of the first things are to look and think, well, what is it in my background that might be influencing my decision? But then also to be able to say, is this something we can actually have a conversation about? And I can support my partner in understanding why this has happened. And what is it showing me?
Yeah.
And showing us as a couple about what else is going on for that person. Because as I've said, the vast majority, if not all of the time, it won't be about the money. It will be about something else. So if somebody is feeling, rejected or not good enough, or they might be worried about something else, it might be they've got a health issue that they don't want to address. And actually going out and buying loads of new clothes makes them feel a bit better. I mean, there could be so many other reasons. And why have they been unable to bring that problem to the table, which is then making them hide the money issues? So being able to sit down again, as you said, as an adult, calmly, and to say, what were you doing and what was the purpose of it, may uncover a lot of things. I think this is where professional help, is great, either with counselling or like a certified financial coach, definitely to kind of have a look at what some of these behaviours were and why they were happening. But I think that it comes down to this inability to discuss money for an awful lot of people. And what will someone else's reaction be? If I say that I'm in debt, if I'm the person who should have paid the bills and actually I've got it all wrong and now we're in arrears with the mortgage, for some people, they'll carry the weight of the responsibility of the finances when really that responsibility should have been shared. I mean, I've seen this a lot in relationships where one person assumed all of the responsibility and wasn't able to keep going with that. And so drop the ball.
Yeah.
And the other partner's blissfully unaware of it's happening. And it hits you like a bolt out of the blue when it comes. Whereas if months ago someone had said, I'm actually struggling to do this, then the problem might have been diverted. But there's a certain amount of
shame.
Yeah, and shame.
And
there's a certain amount of shame in not sharing the problem. So I'm quite sure, many people in counselling and therapy would say that about anything in a relationship. You've got to communicate about it, right?
Absolutely. And for me, for my side, when I was going through the gambling, I mean, I went to speak to my doctor because I was on a certain medication.
Yeah.
And that was one of the side effects was prolific gambling, which...
It blows my mind, Claire.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I went to speak to the doctor. And the doctor, I think I said this to you last week or sometime, the doctor said you need to make a decision between the actual reason why you're taking the medication and the gambling.
Mm.
And I just thought, I've plucked up so much courage to come and talk to you and you've just judged me.
Yeah.
And sent me out of this room like a naughty schoolgirl.
Yeah.
So now I'm not going to speak to anybody for another 18 months.
Yeah, because of that shame that's been piled on
absolutely.
You. And I think that one of the big things that I try and illustrate to people and why I talk about this a lot is that financial well-being is an absolute pillar of mental well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do all the mental well-being work you like, but if you do not address the financial well-being, it's going to fall down at some point because it is such a huge part of it. And as you said, you ended up feeling worse than when you went in because you'd plucked up all this courage and then you don't get the response that you would have needed. And I don't think somebody would have said that if, for example, you were addicted to another drug or alcohol.
Absolutely. It was almost like he didn't know what to do. So do nothing.
Mm.
Anyway. So let's look at next, budgeting.
Yeah.
So what are some key elements then of a successful budget?
Oh gosh, honesty.
Yeah.
Honesty. Yeah. I always start when looking at building a financial plan. Couple of things. First of all, if you don't like the word budget, don't use it. Okay. So for some people, you say, oh, you've got to live by a budget, and they go, sod that.
Yeah.
I don't want to be hemmed in.
Yeah.
So if the word budget doesn't work for you, then don't call it a budget. Call it a spending and a savings plan, whatever you like. And I know definitely people who are neurodiverse have a harder time dealing with a budget as a concept. So but be honest about where you are. So I think sometimes when people think they're feeling empowered to get their finances under control, and they think, I'm going to write this plan down. And then what they do is they look and they think, oh, well, I should be spending, you know, like £100 a week or something on like, you know, food, let's say, for a family. Okay, if you're not spending £100, don't put it.
Yeah.
If in the reality of it is that you are spending double that, then put it down.
Yeah.
Because that's, for me, if you're going to start any form of cycle of change, you need to know exactly where you are, and you need to do that with a lot of honesty. Take off the rose-tinted glasses and have a look. And this is the same if you need to know, for example, if you do carry debt or money that you've already spent, how much is it? And I know people who have literally put bills in kitchen drawers and not opened them. And yeah. I get that completely. But if you don't know where you're at, you can't make a plan for where you want to be. I'm sorry. It sounds really trite, but you can't. So I think the starting point is to list exactly how you are now. What are you spending right now? Go back over your bank statements for the last 3 months and really know exactly where you are going, what debt you might be in, how much everything is really costing you and what you're spending. And I always encourage people that I'm working with to look at a budget planner or a spending plan for a 12-month period. Because oftentimes what we do is say, okay, what do my bills cost me every month, right? But there's going to be things that happen within the space of a year that don't happen monthly. Okay, the amount of people who I speak to who get to kind of October, November and go, oh, it's Christmas soon. And I think, yeah, same time every year, yeah. Weirdly. You know, doesn't change. But all of a sudden we're shocked by this factor. So to me, if you know that you spend money at Christmas or any other, you know, celebration at time of year, if you're the sort of person that celebrates birthdays, like, so if you've got a couple of kids and you know that each one of them at their birthday is going to get X amount of money, get this down on paper. Write it all down. I will give you, for the link in your show notes, the link to my free, no adverts, no data collection budget planner that I have on my website. As I say, we don't ask for your email. You don't need to register. It's completely anonymous, completely free, no adverts. Because I can't stand pop-ups. So you can have that. But put everything down. Even the annual stuff. That way, when you are looking and saying, if I'm paid on a monthly basis, you know that within the space of that pay, that some of these things are going to be saved up.
Yes.
But then we're not getting into that panic mode, which heightens people's emotions, which brings in conflict.
Yeah.
You know? So 2-3 months before Christmas or whatever, we're not, you know, being annoyed at our partner for things, because really what we're doing is sitting there worrying that, you know, we're terrible parents because we're not going to spend a fortune on our children. We all know that that's not actually what kids want, but as parents, that's what we think. I'm a bad parent. Like, you're not, but that's what we think. So that though, doing a planner like that over a 12-month period and being really honest, you can also say, why are we spending X amount of money on? And this is some of the things you can do in your money date. So let's say, you know, I don't know, you're paying for 3 or 4 different TV subscriptions.
Yeah.
If you can afford that, brilliant. If you can't, which one's going?
Yeah.
Which are we getting rid of? You know, how are we going to save some money together? Are we going to stop doing takeaways? Are we going to stop doing this? But you make those decisions together.
Yeah.
And then you can start to change them. The hit and miss of, oh, just cancel this or just cancel that. You actually, if you don't know where you're at the beginning, it to me, it's not as effective.
Yeah. Thank you. So how can people start building an emergency fund, even if they feel they don't have much to save?
Yeah. Yeah. Really good question. And it is difficult when you feel you don't have very much to save. And this is where I love financial technology. So you can get apps that you can attach to your current account that will round up your purchases. Yeah.
I've got one.
Have you got one? Yeah. Great. I use them. Think they're great. What I would say to anybody is if you're using one of those, make sure that it is covered by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme so that it is actually backed. Should the provider fail, you've got some protection there. But people like Revolut, Plum is another one, Monzo Bank is another one that does it. And for those of you who don't know, basically, if you go and spend some money, so let's say you spend £4.75, it will round it up to a fiver. It'll put that 25p in a little savings pot. I bet you won't notice. Because in your head, you've spent a fiver. Because that's what we do. We round up in our heads, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, if something is £11.50, it was 12 quid.
Yeah.
Right? So those little bits of money will start to save up. And it's that consistency that starts to build up a pot. It isn't about how much. Mm. And what worries me, I think, a lot around this kind of thing is that people think if I'm not spending hundreds on it, then it's not worth it and therefore don't do anything. I think you're very fortunate if you've got hundreds of pounds spare to be saving up. But if you just start a consistent, you know, couple of pence here and there, over a period of time, it will start to build up. And then when you look at it, it's like, yeah, I'm getting somewhere. And don't be put off, you know, and definitely do not be put off by what financial gurus tell you on the internet, unless it's me.
You're so right. So I have got that round up and I don't notice it at all, which is amazing. And I think I looked the other day and there was like £100 in it and I was like, get in.
Yeah.
But then I've also got, I don't even know what it is, but it gives me £5 if I check my credit score. This is from my banking app. £5 if I check my credit score. However much, a pound I think it is, if I get direct debits paid into my bank account.
Mm-hmm.
So it perhaps pays me £6 a month. And then if I shop in certain shops, it gives me money. I've no idea where those shops are. But again, I've got over £100 in that. So for me, it's just, I'm enjoying just looking and seeing that and thinking I could absolutely take that money out and go and buy something with it.
Mm.
But no, I'm just enjoying the fact that it's there.
Yeah. And this is one of the things that I think is great about mindset as well. So I've worked with some people before who've really struggled to hold on to money that they have actually saved. And when I've spoke to them, invariably, it will be called an emergency fund or it will be called the rainy day fund. Okay, this is so negative. Like, it's so unbelievably negative. And then you sit there and think, yeah, but it's not bloody raining, so I'm going to spend it, right? So what I encourage people to do, because you can do this now with your banking, is give those pots of money a name that is a bit more inspiring, a bit more positive. So it might be that this is, you know, great fun at Christmas. It might be that this is, you know, beautiful weekend in the Lake District. Like whatever it is that you're putting this money aside for, even if it's just like, this is for future me. This is so that when I am older, I've got this money available. But something that inspires you, something that when you look at it, you can envisage what that money is going to give you. Because imagining that, like, your washing machine is just broken is dreadful. And I won't be inspired by that either.
Yeah, you don't want to put a broken washing machine down.
No, who wants to do that?
Beautiful weekend in the lake sounds so much better. So What three practical steps could you give to listeners that they can take to start improving their financial situation and reducing stress?
Yeah, so the reducing stress, I think, is one of the big ones. So I'm going to say this, and I'm not saying this frivolously. I'm really, really not. Just appreciate it is actually just money.
Okay.
Okay. There is a horrible incidence of suicide and suicide attempts related to money and debt. Yes. There is awful things happen in relationships in terms of conflict and arguments and domestic violence and things around money, which I know is something that, you know, you would be very eager to reduce. This is just money.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, we need it. And yes, we need to pay our bills. But also, we need to understand that there are many, many places to go and get help and ask for help, and that are there ready and willing to support people. You will not be on your own if you've got financial worries. I guarantee you that. Yeah. And I guarantee you that within your own circle of friends, there's probably people who are worrying just like you are, even though you feel you're completely on your own. So I think the first thing is to cut yourself some slack.
Yeah.
Take the pressure off and do what you can do within the scope of what your life is. I think that acceptance and kindness to yourself brings down the stress level straight away. Okay. From there, I think the next thing is to be completely honest about your situation. Now, if you are, for example, in a position where maybe you have run up debt and you're struggling to pay it, go and ask for help. Okay. There's brilliant people out there who can help. As you know, I have my own podcast. It's called Do I Have to Adult Now? I did an episode with a lady called Cheryl Armour, who is a personal insolvency practitioner. Go and listen to it. Go and listen to Cheryl and then go and ring her. She's actually one of the nicest human beings on this planet, which helps.
Yeah.
But there's always help. So be honest. If you know you're struggling to keep up with these things, go and get help before it turns into something much, much worse.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're not, if you're ticking along just fine, but maybe you're finding, you know, you're feeling the pinch a little bit, then as I say, do a plan. What are we actually spending our money on, and do we really need to?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you really need Sky TV, BT, TNT, Disney? Do you really need them, or can we live without them? What can you do to take practical steps to go through each part of your budget, and can we save some money, you know, that way? And if you are in the position where everything is covered, but you're just not hanging on to money, then as I say, maybe looking and saying, well, what are we saving for? Can I give my money more of a purpose that speaks to me about it? And as I said earlier on, if you are in a relationship and you find that there's a bit of conflict, and maybe a lot of conflict, a bit of uncertainty, maybe a little bit of jealousy, a little bit of suspicion around money, book some money dates.
Yeah.
Sit down. Be grown-ups and talk about it and make that a normal sense of being.
And I was just going to say, it's like making it a normality. Just make it something that happens. It's your day-to-day, but not that it's stressing everybody out. It's just a normal conversation, a relaxed conversation.
Absolutely. And then what you can do, and I think you can do this if you're a couple, or I mean you can do it if you're on your own or as a couple or even as a family, is to say, okay, if we're going to make these changes and we're going to try and save up some money, like, we're also going to give ourselves a little treat. So you know, if you're a family, it might be, okay, well, once a month we're going to go to the cinema and we're going to get popcorn and things, and that's our well done as a family for sticking to our budgets. I'm not saying that you live your life with, you know, never enjoying things, but be realistic about what you as a family, or you as a couple, or you as an individual, you know, can realistically do, and ignore the stuff that you see on social media, because I can guarantee that probably at least two-thirds of that stuff is not real or it's paid for with a credit card. So just like be an individual, you know, as a couple or as a family, like be yourselves and think what's best for us, not trying to keep up with with what everybody else is doing.
And that is so important. Social media, you know, it's they only ever put the goodness on there, the fake, So be real, absolutely. So how can listeners maintain a positive mindset when they are working through financial challenges?
I think it is to understand you're not on your own. To understand that there is help there and available for you, and to go and ask for it, and that there is no shame attached to doing that. There is no guilt. There's no one's going to punish you for it. And just to realise that actually, especially with money, I find that if you keep working at it, if you keep the little bits of savings going, if you, you know, pay down the debt, if you maintain the payments towards things, your credit file can improve, the balances can get better. Like, actually, like with money, you actually can see the improvements like happening. You actually can see it. And it is possible. I mean, you know, I'm not sat in an ivory tower at all. I have been in a position in my life of having absolutely no money. I've been in a position where I was more than 50 grand in debt, thanks to the dreadful ex-husband. You know, and you just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other. Understand that it is just money, okay? It can't physically harm you.
Yeah.
Okay? It can't do that. And if you can maintain like that idea that actually I can make this better, you can make it better. But ask for help. Talk about it. Don't feel that it's something to hide from, because it's that bit that will physically affect you.
Yeah.
That's the bit that is the problem.
And we'll catch up with you.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So how can our listeners get in contact with you? Should they want to know more, or should they want some expert advice from you? Where can they catch you?
Yeah, okay. So if you are on Instagram, then if you search Red Star Wealth, if you search Red Star Education, or you search Kristen Money Coach, you will find me on Instagram. We have websites for those three companies as well. We have Facebook pages for those three accounts. But we also run, as I mentioned, a podcast, Do I Have to Adult Now, which helps to explain different financial concepts to people in a way that they can understand and then use on a practical level. Find us on socials. You'll only need to find one company. There tends to be a lot of links between the three of them.
And we'll put a link on this as well. Kristen, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Control the Flame podcast. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode and learned some useful tips on how to manage your anger in a healthy way. If you've been affected by anything in the podcast, or if you want to share your feedback or questions, please email claire@angermanagementcoach.co.uk. And I'll be happy to hear from you and offer you more support. Thank you for listening, and do remember, you have the power to control the flame.